Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Brian Madel. Brian is the owner of Blooming Botanicals, and he is also an expert in cannabis and hemp cultivation and formulation. Thanks for joining us today, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, super excited to have you on. Let our listeners know where you're based out of today.
Yeah, we're in Lansing, Michigan. We've been around for about a year now, but we've been representing the Midwest and one of the more progressive states in some of the legalization and licensing for both cannabis and hemp. So we're happy to see this state come around, and actually for the hemp and CBD kind of aspect of the industry. It's a little bit newer, but still one of the first Midwest states to really go ahead and over heels for it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, recreational sales are booming over there right now, right?
First 2 weeks, $3 million, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, crazy, obviously. So that's amazing. And you have, you know, I'd love to hear your story, your background. Tell me a little bit about Brian. How'd you get into the cannabis industry? Tell me about your background and, you know, how you learned the ins and outs of the whole industry.
Yeah. So, you know, really it started about, well, really it's been more like 12 years ago now when Michigan went medical in 2008. Again, we were one of the first states in the Midwest by quite some time to take that transition. And I had actually gone to college for sustainable environmental resource management. So I was really working in like sustainable agriculture, renewable energy, and research and education. So I kind of was in more of a research position through college and then right after college, but overlapping with that time period in 2008, we went medical. So we began kind of the caregiver and licensed medical marijuana cultivation and did that in conjunction with our other careers, both my wife and I. So I, again, was in the research sector of sustainable ag and renewable energy, while she was more in the health and wellness, doing yoga massage and got into health and nutrition consulting. So we kind of worked hand in hand in the cultivation aspect for a long time and then kind of try to further our health approach. And we both went through the same nutrition school and continue to work on those careers. And so we probably worked for about 9 or so years as growers and caregivers and working with obviously patients and dispensaries kind of in Michigan's odd period. It took a long time for Michigan to get where it is now. Just this year is the first like licensed retail facilities, and now obviously recreational just happened. So there was a long growth period, a lot of education. So it was great to kind of be a part of that sector, but also mixing in a lot more of the nutrition sustainability aspects to be able to kind of add a little more to it than just, you know, growing like a lot of people were. So we did that for quite some time. And then we actually ended up moving to Costa Rica and rented our business out for a little bit and furthered our education in nutrition and some of the different plant medicines, and then came back and continued growing for another few years before the hemp and CBD pilot programs began, which obviously the farm bill just passed for the federal legalization last December. And then Michigan rolled out their first CBD and hemp cultivation, formulation, processing, handling licenses this spring. So we got one of the first licenses for that. Because prior, even though it was legal in other states for pilot programs since like 2014, I actually started a consulting company with my other partner out of Denver, Colorado, and we were doing hemp consulting for a couple of years and sort of made that transition from the full cannabis to a lot more of the hemp national consulting and sales.
Great. Yeah. I mean, you know, you mentioned sustainability and that's kind of your forte. I just had my guy, Tanner Stewart. Not sure if you're familiar with him, but he's got a full aquaponics, a full vertical over in Canada. And, you know, I learned so much from him and just realized how far, you know, as progressive as we are by nature in the industry, just kind of how far we still have to go with sustainability in our cultivation methods. Can you speak on, you know, the current state of sustainability within the industry and kind of what we can do?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of really creative techniques, you know, obviously different growing methods, whether it's hydroponically or even in soil, indoor, outdoor. I think one of the hardest things watching the Michigan, especially cannabis sector for a long time, was based on laws, we weren't necessarily doing things the most effective or efficient way because, you know, for instance, there was a very long period where they made it very difficult to do outdoor cultivation or even greenhouse cultivation. They wanted rigid walls and rigid ceilings, which, you know, the biggest thing in Michigan, especially if you think about how cold it gets, there's a boatload of energy consumption from HVAC. And then you get into obviously the nutrients and having to do different nutrient techniques and, you know, the amount of plastic and containers, you know, that stuff starts to chew at you a little bit. So when you look at some more creative kind of growing practices and utilizing the natural resources we have, whether it's organic soils, actual, you know, sunlight, which just reduces the energy consumption so dramatically, and same with airflow when you can do it outdoors. I think those are some of the biggest things. And for hemp, you know, it started more so as an outdoor cultivation practice, more or less, because the scale is so much larger and plant count has a lot to do with that. You know, every state's different, but for instance, Michigan cannabis, a lot of the licenses were for a few hundred plants, maybe, you know, the class A's or C's are the largest ones at like 1500 plants. But when you think about hemp, you know, people are cultivating that by the acre, even tens and hundreds of acres, which you got a few thousand plants per. So the scale of being able to do it outside is amazing. But then when you get back into, you know, what are the irrigation techniques? You know, when you look at major agriculture nationwide outside of cannabis or hemp, you see really inefficient practices like, you know, spraying water and you only get like 10% absorption in the soil. A lot of that's evaporating off. Where's your water coming from is a huge, huge issue. And we see that where, you know, Midwest and Michigan, again, have great access to water. Although we also have pollution issues and kind of water rights issues as well, but some states that are doing major cultivation with the actual, you know, use of water are even in arid desert areas. And so they're going to see, I think, a major, major awakening in some of the issues they face once water starts becoming something that gets charged hand and foot for, especially in arid California, New Mexico, Arizona, places like that.
Oh yeah, definitely. And, you know, obviously Michigan with the water situation as well. Now, you know, you talked about hemp, you know, but you have a great background in marijuana as well. So, I mean, tell me kind of like, you know, transitioning from marijuana to hemp, you know, how that even came about.
Yeah. Again, part of that was, like you said, the red tape. So Michigan went through a huge transition that was a very, very long period that took about 2.5 years when they were trying to get into a new licensing structure statewide. And we were actually pursuing some of those licenses. And in that time, roughly 2015, 2016 and on, you know, we were looking into licensed marijuana grows, licensed dispensaries. And that's when kind of the farm bill that Mitch McConnell passed in Kentucky, and we had pilot programs in Kentucky and Colorado and Oregon, those just kind of started to surface. So while we were in our kind of waiting phase as, you know, bureaucracy was dragging its feet, we ended up kind of expanding our resources and working nationwide. And we just saw an opportunity to be able to kind of reach more people. Obviously some of the biggest differences aside from kind of the licensing is also the interstate commerce. We got the first hemp approved bank account by our local credit union in town. That was pretty monumental. We have a merchant processor to be able to accept credit cards. Those are huge differences that are some of the biggest struggles with cannabis right now. And those things are going to happen eventually, I'm confident. But licensing, getting insurance to protect your product, pretty much anything that a standard business has, cannabis has to fight tooth and nail for. Uh-huh. And frankly, even the introduction for hemp, there was a lot of, you know, lag in that as well. For instance, the merchant processor, they considered it high risk for years. We were spending, I think, 7% per transaction for a long time on credit card sales, which is pretty astronomical because it was considered high risk. And I was actually at a conference, one of the CBD expos, and there was a financial panel, and there was a huge kind of industry shift where Avalon, which was owned by USA Bank, they were kind of the first bank and merchant processor to come out and say, we are going full hemp, full CBD. We're not going to charge high risk rates. It's going to be standard. So naturally, the majority of companies went to that company. Mm-hmm. And during that festival, they put out a conference, they put out an emergency warning saying we're no longer taking any new accounts, and any existing accounts has 44 days to, you know, find someone new. So obviously that panel just 180, like how many people in this room have this merchant processor? Half raised their hand, everyone's gasping. And so again, those things are coming around, but that transition, we just kind of were in a waiting period that was just somewhat serendipitous. And obviously we're still major supporters and components of cannabis. And in that time frame, we've gone from medical to recreational, and seeing that happen around my hometown and different cities in Michigan has been something that we're extremely proud of. And there is a lot that coincides with it as well. I mean, even the places where CBD is sold, obviously you can be found in a dispensary, but there's more access to people who are maybe more comfortable to go into their local health food stores. We're going to see a lot of the major pharmacies who are holding it. And, you know, the taboos are, you know, kind of coincide, but there's been a lift for sure on hemp. And then I think that's piggybacking the education for cannabis as well. So the industry and just the common knowledge from the public is definitely exponentially more accepting in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it, where just a perception, public perception, it's like, you know, like you said, going to Whole Foods, going to, you know, unfortunately people, they do go into the gas station, wherever it is, you know, people are like, oh, CBD. Yeah, CBD. And then where it's like, oh, cannabis, marijuana. Wow. You know, potheads, this and that. And there's a whole different perception associated with it. And then also talking about, you know, the payment processing, obviously it's been a pain. It's still a pain. You know, the Safe Banking Act, you know, hopefully going to trickle down and start doing some stuff. But yeah, you know, like you said, people having to transition from one processor to another one, from one merchant to another one, banks, and it's still largely a cash business, you know, in the industry. So, you know, and that affects obviously control, where people want to, you know, the government wants to control, they want their pay cut, and that kind of goes and coincides with what you're talking about, the payment processing that they, oh, cool, yeah, 7%, no problem, come over here, right? Because why? Because it's high risk, right? No, it's cannabis, you know, it's cannabis, they got money, it's cannabis, don't worry, we can charge them this and that for the application fees, it's cannabis, they got money, you know, oh, you know, that was the whole thing, you know, it was like Denver, you know, Colorado started doing it, and they're like, holy shit, the state's making so much money, we got to do this, that's, you know, so it was like, there's so much money in this, let's all get our cut, let's all raise the prices, we can do it, but it's going to cost more because you're in cannabis.
Right. Even in the hemp space, which some of the bigger players have come around, and there's a big industry shift, which is amazing to see. You know, 5-6 months ago, the industry joke was, if you haven't been, you know, kicked off of a merchant processor or had a bank account closed, then you haven't been in the space very long.
Yeah.
Because it was inevitable for so long.
Yeah. Seems to taper off a little bit, but still, you know, it's you know, it's still, they're charging 4.7% as opposed to 7%, but you know, it's still not the 3% or, you know, below that that it would be if it was any other industry, definitely.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you said that it's kind of like this, that it was kind of like path of least resistance in a way, but also that it was serendipitous that it worked out for you. Now, but you also mentioned that you're big supporters of cannabis on the marijuana side, everything like that. So tell me, like, you know, your differences, how you feel, you know, in terms of the benefits for people who maybe aren't educated, what could they expect between the different products and you know, what people are looking for in relief?
And it really certainly depends on obviously your individual case, but no question the biggest difference is a psychoactive activity. Although even CBD products, we find, you know, with the entourage effect, having trace amounts of THC can be more beneficial than having, say, a pure CBD isolate. And there's so many other cannabinoids. And, you know, you're going to see next year and moving forward, CBG specific, like more isolated products, and CBN, those are going to come to the market much more and have, like, you know, right now the price for raw materials is so exponentially high that it's hard to make a truly effective consumer product that's going to be tangible for them to do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. You know, for, you know, my wife, Sarah, and I, coming from the nutrition, and we actually used to, we created a superfood product we made when we were in Costa Rica, and we brought that back to the States. So we were working with a lot of different types of plant medicines that we were formulating. And so we were really happy to see, once we kind of got into hemp, aside from just the interstate commerce that opened up the portfolio, the amount of people we could reach, certainly without the psychoactive activity, there was a huge explosion of the demographics. Even though you like to have a niche in the market and kind of what you're focused on, you know, my grandmother, my parents, people of all ages who had never participated in the marijuana scene were really finding relief. My grandmother says she'll never go a day without CBD now. And, you know, she's from Virginia. She's almost 90 years old, and she never would touch anything else. And she tells all her friends about it. It just changed her life. And we've seen that across the board. And, you know, being able to see it work in so many different fashions, whether it's in conjunction with marijuana or by itself, we really opened up a whole new kind of global economy for different therapeutic medicines. And not that, you know, myself as a company owner or any of the other companies can make claims for medical kind of cures or anything of that nature, or nor would we suggest ever for people to change their prescriptions. That's definitely up for their physicians to decide. We've seen testimonials, not in only our own company, but certainly across the industry, of just the amount of prescription drugs that people are able to reduce and sometimes even get off of. For instance, pain medication, actually probably half of our patients say that kind of one of the reasons they came into the CBD space isn't just for pain management, but also for anxiety and depression. And our society definitely fosters a lot of that activity. So for people to find a relief that doesn't have to come from a pharmaceutical company, whether it's a prescription drug or even over-the-counter drugs, you know, what we're able to do for our bodies, whether it's, you know, maintaining a healthy liver from, you know, taking these medications, or, you know, side effects. Side effects are huge. My grandmother was in tears when we first introduced it to her, because she was on opioids and other things that were giving her just nasty side effects. And once she kind of, you know, took a few weeks with this product, she was head over heels for it. And we've definitely seen that just across the board. And so that's, you know, another sustainability aspect that we're really passionate about, is natural remedies, natural, you know, medications or sort of supplements, whatever you want to kind of put them in their pocket. But those things definitely are something we're extremely passionate about. And one of the things that I always thought is amazing for both cannabis and for CBD or hemp is, we came out of prohibition with such high standards. We have this baseline when you look at certificate of analysis or COAs that we don't tolerate as an industry: pesticides, heavy metals, solvents, and things like that. If, you know, whether it's a licensed cannabis product or a you know, licensed CBD or hemp product, those test results have to be highly, you know, publicized, whether it's on a QR code on your product or on a link to your website. And we simply don't tolerate that. And if you think about that for certainly other, you know, pharmaceutical drugs, but even more so, just think about the plants or the produce in your grocery store. If we had those sort of standards where if you tested this product and there was pesticides or heavy metals, you'd have to take it off the shelf.
Yeah.
I'd say the majority of our grocery stores would be empty. And I feel like that's kind of a big kind of eye opener that's trickling down to other industries. So not just cannabis and hemp, but we're starting to set a precedent for, you know, sustainable agriculture for food products and for other, you know, resources, whether it's, you know, plastics or, you know, one use materials, whether, you know, harvesting timber for, you know, artificial or natural, you know, building materials. We're setting a precedent for so many other industries. I actually spoke with a testing lab facility out west, and they had an example where gentleman was creating a CBD hot sauce. And in that CBD hot sauce, he kept getting it tested and tested and kept coming back for pesticides. And he was saying, you know, I've got the raw material here and I know it doesn't have pesticides in it. I'm not sure why my product keeps testing pesticide heavy. And so the lab said, why don't you send me your hot sauce without the CBD and the CBD raw material separate? And sure enough, the pesticides weren't in his, you know, hemp CBD. They were from the bell peppers that he was using in his hot sauce, but that tainted the product to not be able to sell as a CBD product. And so if you look at that, you're like, you have to get organic, high quality produce to even be in this industry. And I feel like that's just should be a huge eye opener for, you know, agriculture in general.
Yeah. I mean, the whole point is that, you know, we're under the microscope, obviously, not only because it's a new industry, but, you know, we're supposed to be for wellness, right? We're supposed to be holding ourselves to a higher standard, because that's the whole point, right? We're banging the table and saying, this is good for people, we're going to help people. And then if we're having all kinds of shit in there, fillers, and people are getting sick, then, you know, it just brings a whole black out of the whole industry. And I totally agree with you where a lot of other industries need to follow suit. And you mentioned food, agriculture, and I don't think, you know, they're not necessarily in the, you know, they're not in the wellness industry. You know, it doesn't make sense, doesn't make money for them to be. That's why we have to pay more money for, you know, for good food, for good vegetables, for good produce, everything, because it's not about that, really. It's about the GMOs. It's about all that. And, you know, so I think there's a bigger issue going on as well in terms of, you know, in America with wellness in general. And being more aware of what we're putting in our bodies and being more aware and, you know, better educated consumers. And if we do that, you know, vote with our dollar, you know, which we shouldn't really have to do. But if we do that, then, you know, I think companies follow suit.
Absolutely. And when you look at some of the struggles, which again, I'm really pleased to see our industry have these initiatives to make sure there is no pesticides, whether they're doing it themselves or getting it from outside sources, whether it's near highways. You have to be very strategic in your cultivation locations as well. I know that especially in Southern California, which is one of our major agricultural belts in the country, growing large acreage near non-hemp agriculture can be very risky because there's such a drift from other pesticides. So if you're in a certain radius of say corn or tomatoes that's getting laced with all sorts of different pesticides, that can not only end up in the groundwater and come through the soil, can also just drift through the air, and it can diminish your entire product. And you know, it's sad to see what's happened to some farmers who have been trying to do it legitimately and have had to face some of the repercussions from bad actors around them.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a horror story. You know, I just had a farmer on recently. And you know, he's doing well, but he's, you know, the stories and, you know, the pressure that they're under a lot of times and, you know, given the nature of, first of all, farming in general, you know, just farming in general is not always as straightforward as we would like. But, you know, like you said, there's a lot of fakers in there and there's, you know, and if something goes wrong, you bet the farm on it and, it could be the end for, you know, people perceive it to be the end anyways. So definitely a lot of sad stuff going on there. And, you know, piggybacking on what you said earlier, you know, as well, you know, talking about the wellness of CBD, you know, and talking about CBG, and CBG is definitely going to be a big player. You know, I was talking recently with Dr. Stephen Todd, and he was talking about, you know, I've heard people say, well, CBG costs so much right now, because it's kind of like the, you know, the new kid on the block and people are really excited about it. You know, but that, you know, this is how it was with CBD a few years ago and it kind of tapered off a little bit, you know, evened out. And then Dr. Tarr was saying, no, it's actually because CBG is a more rare molecule within the plant. Can you kind of give me your view on that, you know, with CBG right now and where you think it'll be in the next few years, in that term?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of when you look at, you know, even back to the 70s, when you think about cannabis, the THC levels in cannabis was so much lower.
Yeah.
But we have amazing specialists, you know, worldwide who have worked really hard to do very sophisticated strain and genetic not necessarily modification, but breeding to cultivate quality organic product, but by raising that THC. And CBD was the same. We came out of prohibition, even in the pilot programs, like we had mentioned in 2014, is kind of when all this came back into the world. And hemp before that was, you know, which is still amazing, but it was used more for your, you know, building materials, ropes, artificial plastics, pretty much everything besides extracting the CBD molecule for a, you know, health product. So once that happened, CBD, just like CBG is now, the percentages were much, much lower, because what the THC specialist did was trying to reduce the CBD and increase the THC. So then this is another funny similarity. The elephant in the room is these are essentially the same plants. They're different kind of strains and styles, but they're all that, you know, that sativa L plant when you go down to the base of it. So CBD from 2014 on, we've had major growth from how high we can get those percentages. Uh-huh. And that's what makes your kind of return come back for your extraction. So for instance, when you look at biomass right now, people will essentially not touch, say, biomass that's 10 or 9% or lower CBD, because the amount of cost to purchase the biomass and run the machines and the staff, the cost benefit analysis is that's just essentially too low for the industry. Although up until about this year, it was been very difficult to get hemp plants that could exceed maybe 8% in CBG. So you have to use so much more material, labor, equipment to be able to extract the same amount of, say, weight in kilograms or grams or however you want to produce that. So I imagine that, and I'm very confident in this, in the next few years, we're going to see a lot more geneticists and breeders be able to really dramatically increase that CBG content. But I do think from a, you know, just chemical and biological perspective, it's still going to be lower than CBD. There's really only a handful of molecules that are going to be efficient to do so. CBN as well is going to be a big one, but they're just not as readily available in the plant like CBD. And then when you think about all those other, you know, right now, I believe, and this changes every day, there's like 40 known cannabinoids, like what, 4 years ago. And now we have kind of identified over 200. So I'm sure we'll continue to identify those, but the rate of return on extraction is not going to be the same. Not every cannabinoid is created equal in the kind of cost benefit analysis. So I think, The doctor you had spoke with is right on. It's a harder molecule to kind of pinpoint and pull out for medical use. But I am confident that, you know, the industry is going to be able to increase those percentages in the plant themselves of pre-extraction.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about that, you know, because obviously, like you said, you know, just the quality and geneticists out there that are growing, you know, talking to Adam Jacques a few weeks ago as well, and people, you know, just mad geniuses, you know, so to speak, where this is the obsession. He loves it. He's obsessed with it. And he's just constantly looking at how he can create a better product, you know, better crop. So very exciting, definitely. You know, and, you know, you mentioned different cannabinoids. It always is, you know, varying. Like you said, it was 30, 40. Now, you know, somebody says 130, you say it's 200. But like you said, you know, it's like, we've already had so many barriers here, you know, talking about, you know, Israel's kind of led the way with CBD, and, you know, there's still a lot of barriers in terms of research with CBG and CBN, you know, and other cannabinoids that are coming up. Where do you see that? Do we kind of have to wait, you know, because CBD, now we've been studying it, you know, for 40 years, you know, and now it's just barely becoming, you know, where we are now. So where do you see that as well? Is it kind of going to, since this has kind of opened the door now, it's just going to be a snowballing effect for the other ones as well?
Absolutely. I see it as an exponential growth in research and development. I think we're, you know, in the hemp and cannabis specific time period, we're in a informational renaissance that we haven't seen. When you think about Israel, we kind of spoke about, has been doing it for 30 plus years. That's a very small enclave of the globe. And, you know, obviously the legalities and the red tape for not just research, but the industry is going to dramatically change the input that's going into it. You know, sadly, money talks, and laws often manipulate where that money and energy and sophistication is being allocated. Now you see major universities doing hemp studying. Before, I think there was just one in Mississippi that was allowed to study it prior to the federal lift on hemp and CBD. So if you think about just how far we've come in the last year, now there's money in the industry. Now there's people coming, you know, from all different diverse backgrounds. And this is something that my wife, Sarah, and I are so interested and pleased to see. Like, we come from a sustainability and health background, but you see, you know, brilliant chemists coming out of Ivy League University or, you know, different industries. You see biologists, agriculture professionals, Wall Street people. And it's not only a multi-industry platform, it's also kind of one of the first big changes from a bipartisan issue. I feel like cannabis is starting to find that, but I see it dramatically as a bipartisan kind of industry for hemp because, you know, from everything from major agriculture, or even you think about, you know, the first politician to really be the pioneer in getting pilot programs was Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, of conservative politician from a conservative state, trying to help the state out by replacing old industry that, you know, has kind of gone below the wayside, like coal and tobacco. And part of that, again, is education from health and sustainability. Those industries needed a shift, and hemp was able to replace that. You look at Colorado, too, from maybe a political spectrum can be very different than a state like Kentucky, but they can bond over a similar issue, and they were the first two states to do it. I wouldn't even say Colorado is necessarily poised to be the best agricultural state. They're arid, they're in the mountains, they have hail and all sorts of natural issues that they have to face, but you know, in 2014 they were one of the first states to do it, so they're going to be the pioneers. A lot of people migrated there for jobs, and you know, you attract people based on your laws and your industry that you allow. So now that we are seeing more and more states come on and a federal lift, I think that whether it's CBNG, you know, hemp or cannabis, we're going to see a major, major informational kind of twilight coming in the next few years. It's really already begun.
Yeah, I really hope so. And you know, you're an expert in this, and you know, you mentioned about the studies in schools and universities. And, you know, my perception is that there's still been a big barrier because they're federally funded, obviously. And the main thing is they don't want to, you know, screw up with their funding as well, you know, and obviously research takes money, it takes funding. So who are funding these studies, and where is the money really coming from?
Yeah, so there's obviously been a lot of private investment in doing some of these fundings. But also for hemp, which is a little different from cannabis, in December 2018, they did do a federal lift. So it is federally legal. And now what you see is different states coming on with their own licensing practices. Michigan, for instance, they actually didn't roll out their hemp licenses for growing, cultivation, handle, processing, all of that until May of 2019, which is still an early adopter. That wasn't a state with like a major pilot program like Kentucky and Colorado. But if you think about that, you know, in Michigan, unlike, you know, Southern California, Florida, other places, we have a much shorter growing season. So when a license availability comes out in May, not a lot of major industry players had a lot of time to build a full business platform, make sure they had the proper soil location, agricultural land to have plants in by May and June. So this is kind of like a lot of beta testing for Michigan growers. We're going to see an explosion of, you know, land and allocation and time and resources. But I do know that there are a number of universities that are doing education now for hemp products. And some of that isn't all CBD and cannabinoids. For instance, Kentucky, one of the Kentucky universities, and I could be wrong, so I'm not completely sure. I believe it was University of Kentucky. Their students actually have been researching a lot of hemp fiber products, and they were part of making the first hemp bridge, which is like a major, obviously, industrial civil engineering practice. So I think that aside from private investment and private research, there are universities that are coming on right now. But what we haven't seen a lot of is some of that subsidized funding and grant funding. And I think that once we see, you know, government or state issued grants, that's when, you know, a lot of different educational resources are going to be able to do that, because, you know, universities on their own, even private universities, have to battle with their allocation of funds. So I think we're going to start to see an explosion of that within the next few years.
Yeah, excited about that as well. No doubt about it. I guess one of the things that we can bring down from the research, you know, the continued research is better education, because, you know, kind of, you know, we kind of live in this time right now where people are kind of sitting on two sides of the spectrum, two complete extremes, where people are still saying, I want to see more research, it's still not conclusive, or and then there's other people who are saying, this is the greatest thing ever, you know, this is a miracle plant, this is gonna change the whole life, and this is gonna be, we're gonna be able to see that this is a cure for everything, and the different cannabinoids and how they interact with the endocannabinoid system, and you know, so you kind of get these two extremes. Where do you kind of sit on that spectrum in terms of CBD, hemp, cannabis in general, and you know, being a miracle plant as opposed to you know, let's see some more stuff.
Yeah, I think again, you know, it's all going to depend on the person and what you're trying to aid. And you know, with cannabis, there's a recreational component as well, but societally, we've seen a major lift in the taboos, and I think hemp is leading the way in that, partially from the federal lift, but obviously non-psychoactive components to the plan, the medicines or the supplements, are going to make it so that it's easier to adopt. But you know, I was sitting at a restaurant last night after a meeting with my wife, and we overheard a group of people, you know, openly talking about recreational cannabis. And you know, we kind of were just sitting back, and even though it's been medical here for a long time and recreational for a while, we just had our recreational stores open 2 weeks ago, and we're just sitting back and listening and kind of grinning to the fact that, you know, the taboos are lifting, in the same sense that the laws are almost identical to alcohol now. But you could go through, you know, a mall or have your kids with you, and if people were talking about alcohol, people wouldn't bat an eye. And I think that those major shifts from a societal standpoint are monumental right now, and it's the very, very beginning, in my mind, at least in kind of my state from a recreational standpoint. And we can start to merge, you know, not just the recreational use, but some of the more sophisticated education and application, I think we're going to see a lot more adoption from both kind of modalities, whether it's hemp or cannabis, and being able to merge the two and having them work in conjunction, having different distribution. I don't know how long it's going to take, but in my mind, just seeing where alcohol and different medicines have come from and how they're delivered from, you know, specific, you know, some states you can only buy alcohol in specific stores, some are in grocery stores. I would imagine that in our future, might not be near future, cannabis, just like hemp, might be able to be bought at, you know, grocery stores and not secluded just to dispensaries. So, you know, all of this is going to take time, but when you hear CEOs and founders of some of these major distribution networks or grocer chains say, yeah, you know, I'm for, you know, marijuana being in a grocery store just like hemp, you know, at the very beginning, it sounds kind of odd, but, you know, we'll probably be talking to our grandkids and great grandkids, and they're going to think we're wackos for not having this our whole lives.
Yeah, that'll be funny. I mean, and we even already take it for granted, even the dispensary thing, you know, instead of, you know, having a guy that you got to go see, you know, and waiting in the car for him to show up, you know, so it's a whole nother game now, you know, I mean, even the dispensary, you know, so.
And I think that one of the cool things about hemp, again, is in some ways it paves the way for some of those taboos. You know, in more conservative states or places that don't have even medical cannabis or marijuana at this point, do have hemp in their grocery stores and Kroger's, whether it be West Virginia or even some of the other Midwest states that are just starting to adopt it. That is going to trickle into both industries, especially once the education for how similar the plants are and why people are consuming it in different ways. But when you have a federally lifted ban on products that can be in states that don't have to have medical or recreational licensing, I think that's a great, you know, door opener for, you know, future production in both industries merging together.
Definitely, no doubt. It's just normalizing and little by little, you know, seeing it here, seeing it there. And like you said, it won't be too far off when we have just cannabis products everywhere. So I want to hear about your company, Blooming Botanicals. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, so my wife, Sarah Burney, and I have our company, Blooming Botanicals. Again, we kind of transitioned from cannabis years ago, but also merged our background in health and nutrition with sustainability and kind of our background in kind of the general cannabis plant. And so what we really focus on is herbally infused products and, you know, active bioavailability. So aside from just CBD, which, you know, can be used for so many purposes, we really took some of our information from our past companies working with other superfoods and different herbal infusions to kind of pinpoint other things that can be useful. For instance, you know, we have a lavender formulation that can aid in, you know, sleep and relaxation, and then turmeric and black pepper blend, which is probably our most popular. And you know, turmeric in itself is a potent anti-inflammatory and antidepressant. So we see that a lot of people come for not just pain relief, but a lot of the mood disorders. And you know, the turmeric and black pepper, for instance, a lot of people aren't completely aware, but turmeric, the active ingredient in the turmeric plant or spice or powder is curcumin, and that is your anti-inflammatory antidepressant. But there's only 3% actively of curcumin in the powder. So we actually do a CO2 extraction and make a potent liquid form that becomes 95% curcumin. So it's a therapeutic dose of that component. And then whether you're taking a supplement or a spice of just turmeric and you're using it for those properties, you actually have to have black pepper and a fat, so it's actually absorbed into your body. And so the black pepper actually makes it 2,000 times more bioavailable. So when you think about, you know, Indian cultures, for instance, turmeric is one of their most popular spices, and they put black pepper in everything because that actually helps it absorb. And black pepper is actually a carrier and absorbent for a lot of other herbs, including CBD as well. And so we have a extracted black pepper and extracted turmeric in that formulation. And then, for instance, our topical salve, we use a jojoba oil rather than like a coconut oil or olive oil, because it's an active carrier. A lot of those other topicals, they ultimately are just surface level and staying on the surface of your skin and actually can make a barrier, where jojoba actually absorbs it into your skin. So it's one of the best carriers for topical CBD use. And then we do other herbal infusions like burdock root, comfrey, and calendula. And we do an initial infusion before, you know, mixing that into the jojoba and the other ingredients. And then we add, obviously, like eucalyptus and tangerine and some other components, so that, you know, those products on their own are fantastic products with or without the CBD. So we find that, you know, having kind of more specific attributions for different herbs and different plant medicines can kind of just, you know, be a bonus additive and works really well in conjunction with the CBD.
Wow, that's amazing. That's fascinating because, you know, I mean, you guys have just different products. It's the way you incorporate it. That's great. You know, obviously, you know, being in the industry in and of itself, you know, you talk about the red tape coming from the cannabis side, you know, the marijuana side over to the CBD side. You know, and what's kind of been the biggest obstacle you guys have faced, you know, now that you guys here, CBD got these great products, and how have you been able to overcome it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it was, you know, early on adoption. So licensing, once it came around, you know, my wife and I work in a very legal, conservative manner. So, you know, it was funny. For years, we had been wanting to start this company and these products. And, you know, we had made them on our own, but we didn't want to bring them to market until we knew everything was completely peachy. And we even heard from different politicians and different people, especially when I started working and licensed a company in Colorado because of their pilot program. And they were just like, oh, yeah, you should have just done it here. Like, there's no enforcement. And, you know, you kind of laugh at it, but you're like, this is why people toe the line and are really careful. And, you know, I'm proud of some of the pioneers who take the risk, whether it's cannabis or hemp. But we were always very, you know, online with making sure the laws were there. So we waited, even though we did a lot of our own beta testing and formulation ahead of time. So that was kind of one of the main barriers, is just being patient. And then obviously, you know, getting adequate bank accounts and working with different municipalities or institutions. Same with merchant processors. We jumped around with those. We even launched our company with one who, again, had an extremely high rate. And then they didn't even tell us on launch date. We get all these orders coming in, and they're only taking MasterCard. They're not even taking Visa. They told us they might not take American Express, which is a little more rare, but we didn't know until the launch date, so we had to go back and all those people, apologizing with discount and all that stuff. And it's not how you want to start your business day. But we overcame those hurdles. And so now it's, really obviously standing out, and we were fortunate enough to already have our unique products. And we do custom formulation, which is great. A lot of companies, especially in the hemp and CBD space, more power to them for being able to enter the space, but a lot of those products are white labeled. So there's a lot of similar products on the market. But really just, being true to your company and having integrity and not cutting the corners, getting things third-party testing, making sure that, the amount of, say, cannabinoids that you're claiming is in the products. Sometimes it's a battle to go against companies who might be taking those shortcuts and, also just kind of handling the information, the taboo. And, I'm happy to see it sold in a lot of places. But like you said, some people who go to gas stations or, movie stores and things like that, it can add a certain connotation to the product industry-wide. So we do a lot of education. We do a lot of events. Our wholesalers, anyone who carries their product, we really like to educate and make sure that they're providing their clients the adequate information, because we think there's a lot of space for everyone, again, whether it's cannabis or hemp. This is a major industry, and I think it can reach a lot of people. So we never like to, put other companies down. We even highlight other companies, especially ones that have different products or just, great people. And some of those struggles is, industry-wide, you see, a lot of kind of overlap with promises that aren't made, and, just being really, really good with kind of your partnerships, your sourcing, obviously facing the limitations of Mother Nature. It's not easy to be an emerging industry, because you have to kind of take the brunt of figuring it out for everyone else. And, people have done it even before I, and, I'm pleased for those groups as well, because there's a big learning curve in any emerging industry.
No doubt about that. And we're kind of writing the rules as we go. Like you said, what you mentioned here, like separating yourself, I mean, that's like one of the biggest things for any company in general, and especially in this space, especially since there's so much noise and there's a lot of, like you said, you don't want to poo-poo other companies, but there are, people who aren't doing things the right way or subpar products. And, the consumer may not know that the first time when they go on and they buy it, or they're looking and, they see blooming botanicals and they see someone else. And so what are you guys doing to separate yourselves? And, aside from jumping on my podcast and other podcasts, I know you're a podcast vet, which is amazing, way to bring awareness, no doubt about that.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think obviously unique products and custom formulation is one, because there's a lot of similar products out there. And certainly education, doing a lot of events, getting out there, being active in your community. We beta tested the product for months before we actually launched our fully branded product. And every time we roll out new products, we send it out to people who have and have not tried it, and we give them free product and take their testimonials and tweak it. And we try not to rush to the market, even though the market's moving extremely fast. Mm-hmm. We try and, even though we're early adopters, we really take our time. And a lot of it has to do with integrity and just weathering out some of those storms. And, we've had some of those conversations with clients who come to us who say, CBD just doesn't work for me. It wasn't strong enough, this and that. And there could be a million reasons for it. And it's not necessarily just the product they had, but maybe the education on how much they were using or how they were applying it, or what was the active ingredients and carriers aside from the cannabinoids. Was it even CBD, or was it hemp seed oil that doesn't have necessarily those same components? And so there's a lot of education, a lot of time spent. Sarah and I, frankly, especially in the beginning, we give away our personal emails and our personal phone numbers and, say, call us directly. And we've spent so much time just working with individual clients or wholesalers and, really just taking the time to do that, not just for ourselves, but obviously for the industry in general. And we've referred people to other companies as well. If they say they're looking for something different that we don't carry, we have a handful of friends in the industry or just people that we think are doing it well. And, you know, just kind of being true to yourself a little bit and, you know, weathering out some of those storms.
Yeah, I mean, being true to yourself, I think that's the key is, you know, making something, like you said, you guys unique, you know, turmeric blend, this blend, that blend. It's, you know, it's something that's definitely standing out. But like you said, you know, not only being true to yourself in terms of what you're putting out there, but, you know, true to yourself in terms of your ethics and values. And really pleasure talking to you, you know, with this, you know, because I can see you guys have a great brand and great values as well now. What can we expect from Blue Moon Botanicals in the future? What's coming up next?
Yeah, well, we got, you know, a whole bunch of events we're excited for, whether it's conferences or, you know, different places where we have booths, obviously. And Sarah and I do those ourselves often, so we're happy to meet different people. We're going to be putting some event calendars up, and we've got a number of products that we're working on launching, like kind of the one that just finished up our beta tests and formulation runs is our body butter. We're extremely excited about. We've got a lot of feedback for to kind of go with our other topical, where the salve is more for acute pain. The body butter is like an all over kind of more of a luxury and health product. So that one we're really excited about. But it's funny, we, you know, especially my wife, Sarah, she is truly like the formulation, the plant medicine guru. You'll have to talk to her sometime, but she is like the wizard with all of that. And we have business strategists and analysts that we work with all the time. We're like, you know, you really got to stick to your core and make sure, you know, get a good market immersion and distribution. Because one thing we always want to do, we have a whole list of these amazing products we're so excited to launch, but we have to kind of take our time. So over the next year or two, we're going to roll out some extremely unique things that we're really excited about. That's kind of in our back pocket.
Ooh, exciting, exciting. Cool, yeah. And I mean, I wanted to have Sarah on too, you know, but I think it's worked out well. I get to speak to you, have your viewpoint, and then we can get Sarah on later on down the road, because it seems like she's got a whole different skill set that bring a lot of value to people as well. So definitely now.
Absolutely.
As
it's fun being a husband and wife team for sure.
Yeah, we didn't even get into that as well, you know, being a husband and wife team and – you know, being able to, you said you wanted to do this together for a long time. You know, we also have a team here, you know, me and my fiance, and going well, you know, and
nice.
Super fun, you know, it's super fun to be able to grow it and to, you know, build your dream together. Definitely. That's for sure. And, yep. You know, give and take, it's just another aspect of that, you know, so it's really awesome. I'll ask Sarah when I have her on, and I'll ask you now. You know, what is your definition of success, and what does success look like to you?
You know, for me, success is certainly, you know, making a difference, but having a quality lifestyle. And we've, again, have been very fortunate to be a husband and wife team in multiple businesses and working together in cannabis and health and things for over a decade now and being entrepreneurs. And the entrepreneurial life is very gratifying and also very challenging, especially when you and your wife are riding it all together and every loan, everything you do, when you always have everything riding on yourself, you know, it takes a lot of mental fortitude for sure. But for me, success, especially in emerging industry, is really to bring unique quality products to people that make them happy and can benefit them in some way or another. And for my wife and I to be able to lead a kind of a unique and fun life together and kind of have that balance as well. It's something that we always want to make sure we do. You know, we have to have some of those, you know, phone off, industry off, date nights once in a while, because when you're husband and wife team, whether it's taking the dogs for a walk or talking over dinner, it's difficult not to talk business a lot because it's so new and exciting and passion filled and we're building something unique. So, you know, we love many things, whether it's travel, you know, we live in Costa Rica, go skiing a lot, love live music. So we like to get a nice balance there and just kind of be able to continue traveling and meeting new people in the industry and seeing what kind of cool collaborations we can do.
Yeah. I mean, you said it, you know, enjoying the journey with each other and having that balance. No, I totally relate to that as well. You know, turning off the phone and, you know, turning it off. You know, today we're recording this on December 19th, Star Wars just came out, you know? So today it was like, cool, this is great. You know, we're going to go and have a midday Star Wars movie date, you know, so that was really cool. And like you said, it's You know, my friends are like, wow, this is so cool. You know, we get to, usually we're grinding, you know, every, so it's just cool to just put that aside and, you know, midday, just go and do something for us. So I totally agree with that as well. Now as we close, how can our listeners find out more about you, find out more about Blooming Botanicals and connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, certainly if you want to learn a little bit more about the products, you can check out our website. It's bloomingbotanicalshemp.com. And you can definitely follow some of our journey on Instagram at Blooming Botanicals Hemp or Facebook at just Blooming Botanicals. And yeah, check out my wife, Sarah Burney, and myself, Brian Madel. And we're always working together. We actually work with our other partner, Sarah's brother, Ben Burney. He's a little more on the side, but he's been, I've been consulting with him and doing a lot of the sourcing and things for years. He's also an amazing glass artist, one of the top in the country. So we get to do a lot of fun stuff together in the family business. So come check us out.
That's so cool.
If you're ever in Michigan, we're around.
That is so cool. You know, I really love that, you know, the family business, and you guys seem like great people, and, you know, doing it the right way, that's for sure. So really appreciate it. Really appreciate having you on as well. So, you know, thanks again for jumping on with us today.
And yeah,
definitely. Pleasure's all mine, definitely. And, you know, good luck to you in 2020 and beyond. I'm looking forward to speaking to Sarah down the road as well, catching up with you guys.
Absolutely. Well, happy holidays and have a good new year, and we'll have to reconnect soon.
Thank you. Thank you. You as well. All the best.
All right. Take care.
We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, that's CALACANN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.